As I remember, California State Polytechnic College, San Luis Obispo, presents another in its series of interviews with distinguished retired staff members, their memoirs and recollections. This one is Barb Shepherd. Barb, when did you hear about Cal Poly, and what year, and how did you happen to come here?
Well, George, goes back a long ways to the time I was at Las Manas. I had made several trips to Cal Poly with judging teams and various other groups, and also attended the summer session. In the summer of 1932, I was informed by regional supervisor Robert Denby that I had better stick around close. However, I had a chance to return to Minnesota for a vacation, and while there I received a telegram from California State Polytechnic School that they were offering me a position that fall at San Luis Obispo.
Why? Was it something that seemed to present a challenge to you? Why did you leave high school teaching and come over here to this position here?
Well, George, it was a challenge, and of course, as you remember, 1932 was the height of the Depression, and it looked to me as though it was an opportunity to get into the work that I so much desired, animal husbandry.
And did you talk to Julian McPhee at that time about his ideas concerning the service area of Cal Poly?
I don't remember talking to President McPhee at that time. However, I did talk with J.I. Thompson, who I had worked with previously in high school agriculture.
And Tommy explained that Mr. McPhee wanted to make this a service center for the VOAG teaching, teacher training, and future farmers and so on, did he?
That's right. He was interested in making a center for the future farmers, or a home for the future farmers in California, and also to train the VOAG teachers in the type of training that he felt essential for high school teachers.
And at that time, they had just completed the first full year of teacher training under Mr. McPhee's plan of internship. Is that right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, Bart, what kind of setup did you find here, facilities, students, and so on, when you came here in 1932?
George, it was rather discouraging. We had very few students. In fact, after making rounds of the high schools and bringing in a few students from the various schools that the new instructors were coming from, we ended up with 33 students in agriculture.
Well, that wasn't a very propitious start, and not all of those, I guess, were in animal husbandry either, were they?
No, we had 19 students in animal husbandry, which was the largest group at that time, and I guess still is, but we had some very fine boys.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me a little bit about the facilities that you found here.
Facilities consisted of a hog or swine barn located about where the new agricultural classroom building is, and a beef shed that was built for a fairgrounds barn about at the lower end of the present science building. This was an open shed with pens. The dairy used one side for a feed barn, and the animal husbandry used the other side to feed steers for show.
And sheep were mostly out on the range, were they?
Sheep were on the range and up in the old Curlew barn.
Mm-hmm. And that Curlew barn would be about where the feed mill is now, in that vicinity?
That's right. That's the old Curlew cabin.
Mm-hmm. Well, what steps did you take, could you take, in those early years to improve the situation in terms of students or curricula or facilities or anything?
I remember very well the first trip I made out to do the livestock. Harry Parker was then employed as herdsman. The beef herd at that time was over on across the highway from where now is Telegraph or Hill. We had about 14 or 15 Hereford cows and a few, five or six shorthorns. Rather disappointed in the number, but we did find several excellent cows coming from the old Kazir herd in Nevada.
I see. And then you, and along with that Harry and perhaps G.I., set out to see what you could do in terms of better bulls and to build up that herd, is that right?
That's right. I remember the old herd bull, old Colorado 18th, purchased from the Briggs Ranch at Dixon. We also purchased some shorthorns from the San Julian Ranch, Lompoc, and a few head of both Herefords and shorthorns from the University at Davis.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was the level of student instruction when you came here, Bard?
Well, it was, you might say, senior high school to first year of junior college.
Mm-hmm. Most of the agriculture students at that time did come from farms, is that right?
Well, a number of them, yet we had quite a number of city boys that showed up from time to time that sometimes turned out to be problem children.
Well, you also had the other thing happen, that some of those city boys turned out to be real good agriculture students and went on to make quite a success, isn't that true?
That's true, and in the following years, more and more of this type of student turned up at Cal Poly, and some of the outstanding students at that time were boys from the smaller towns.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that you did find here was a little background in showing. They had been taking some animals to the fair. Could you tell me a little bit about that and what it meant and so on?
The first year we had a carload of Angus steers to show at the Great Western in Los Angeles. We got together a few calves for the spring show in San Francisco. We did not have a long enough time to get them into prime condition. However, the first crop of calves by the old Colorado 18th bull are really outstanding. And as I remember, in the fall of 33, we had 10 or 12 steers at the Great Western in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. The first group of boys that you had to show in the Future Farmer Division. There wasn't any other place for them, is that right?
They showed in the Future Farmer Division at the Junior Livestock Show in San Francisco, but in the Open Division at the Great Western in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. And then later on, in later years, they showed entirely in the Open Division, or when there was a college division created later on, they participated in that, is that right?
That's right. The Junior Livestock Show created what they called an advanced division, which we showed as long as the junior show held in San Francisco. But from there, we went on to both State Fair and Great Western and the Topalis into the Open Division.
Mm-hmm. And in the early days, if the boys had a champion in their division, it could compete for grand championship in practically any of these shows. Is that right?
That's right, where they had the two divisions showing at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think that something rather humorous happened. I think you were going to the Junior Livestock Show at the stockyards, and it must have been in the spring of 1933, and got a little shipping problem. What was that, Bard?
We loaded out in the afternoon with one of Santa Claus' truck and trailers and got down to about where the present football stadium is located today, and the truck broke down. At that time, it's very difficult to pick up another truck in a short order. Santa Claus had a second truck. But this was the day that the prohibition ended, and they were hauling a load of beer in from San Francisco. So we had to wait that night until the beer truck got in and had an opportunity to unload it and reload the cattle and go on to San Francisco during the night.
But just to get the record straight, Bard, that the beer truck wasn't coming to Cal Poly. That was to take care of the thirsty citizens of San Luis Obispo. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Well, then, Bard, you were here from 1932 to 1937, and did any progress take place in building, increasing students during that period?
Students increased very rapidly. As I remember, we had about 300 or 400 in agriculture at the end of the five-year period. The buildings, we had a building program mapped and plans. The swine barn, as it now stands, was built 1936 and 7. The plans for the sheep barn and for the present steel barn had been made and locations settled. The idea at that time was to have the agricultural building about where the old poultry unit was located, so it would have access to the outlying stations. And with the new master plan, it fit in almost perfectly.
Well, that brings you up to 1937, and at that time, with your previous experience in stockyards, you thought you'd take another fling working in that area, did you?
It looked as though it might be a good area to get some advancement in, and I decided to leave to go with the Union Stockyards at San Francisco and Stockton.
And how long were you with them, Gordon?
A little over 4 years, but in during that time I kept pretty close track of Cal Poly and had the opportunity of working with them in the junior livestock shows, and especially at the World Fair on Treasure Island, where I handled all of the building and equipment for the livestock shows.
And then you left the stockyards, and then what did you do, Gord?
In 1941, I had an opportunity to go to university to work as a livestock specialist in the extension.
With particular emphasis on beef?
No, it was work with swine, sheep, and beef cattle.
I see, And, of course, very shortly after that, the war came along. Did that interfere some with what you planned to do and what the university hoped you'd do?
That's right. In fact, it was only 2 weeks after I entered the university December 7th. Many things happened very rapidly. I was switched then for a time to the state labor group that was under the university, but Louis Roxford, head of the extension, livestock extension, accepted position manager Tehan, and the director called me back to handle the livestock extension work during the war.
Well, I remember calling on you during that period, and I went to where your old office had been, and they said, well, Mr. Shepherd isn't here now. He's over there in labor.
I was labor all right, but it was very interesting to see the work that was taking place in bringing in Mexican laborers to help agriculture during that trying period.
Why was it during after the war or during the war that this system of grading bulls and so on was developed and grading the whole herds in terms of performance? What was the history there?
The history is rather long. It dates back previous to the war when Louis Roxford started a program of grading various herds. However, during the war period, the incentive to produce more beef and to get better bulls gave greater impetus to this program. The Red Buck Bull Sale was started about that time, and we worked with the directors to get them to grade the bulls for sale. This was the first sale in which the buyer had an opportunity of knowing the grade of a bull when it entered the ring.
Now, you were active in that program, Bart.
Yes, I worked with that program and graded a number of herds throughout the state, and one of the major herds that still retain that program was the crow herd at Millville.
All right, now, this brings us over a 10-year period during which you were absent from San Luis Obispo, but in 1947, Julian McPhee got a hold of you, did he, and asked if you'd like to come back?
That's right. It happened up at the Cow Palace. Mr. McPhee and Mr. McCorkle talked to me and asked me if I was interested in coming back to Cal Poly. I said, well, I would have to think it over.
What was the major incentive that caused you to say yes?
We like San Luis Obispo. We like Cal Poly and the ideals in education that Mr. McPhee had established here.
And you came back in a different position than the one you had when you left. What was that, Gord?
Well, I came back as Dean of Agriculture Division.
What changes have taken place not only in the number of students but in agricultural facilities during that 10-year period?
Well, during that period, the agriculture enrollment had grown, and of course in 1947, with the large number of veterans returning, we had a different class of students entirely. The sheep barn had been built, the steer barn had been completed, and while the campus was covered with wartime buildings of the old Hutmans, it nevertheless was a booming going concern of about 1,100-1,200 students.
Mm-hmm. Now, by a different kind of students, do you mean that many of the returnees were more mature and had a very strong objective and what they wanted to do and so on?
That's right. They were older, and they had made up their mind that they wanted to complete their college work. They were industrious and a real fine group of boys.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lard, in the next few years, the offerings of Cal Poly in the agricultural area were expanded, the specialized fields. What were some of these, and if you remember, what years did they come along?
Well, I do not recall the years that the various departments developed, but agricultural engineering was changed from ag mechanics, and then later on changed into agricultural engineering and mechanized agriculture. The ag business management department was started along about 55. Farm management had started a few years previous. The main two, and also a food processing department, taking in crops, meats, and farm products.
Mm-hmm. And what specialized program was it that had to do with the horse industry, Lord?
Well, during the war, the California Thoroughbred Breeders had presented Cal Poly with 6 or 7 thoroughbred mares. Also assisted them in getting buildings started to equip a horse unit. However, there was a shortage of horseshoers for the racetrack, and of course, as you remember, the horse industry at that time going from the draft horse to the pleasure horse. And they were looking for more shoers, and the Horse and Mule Association gave Cal Poly a sum of $5,000 to use as scholarship to entice students to come and take horse shoeing.
And that program was almost an immediate success, is that right?
That program was an immediate success. The students, we had applications from all over the United States, and within 3 years we had a 3-year backlog of students enrolled.
Mm-hmm. And then also during that period, especially toward the latter part of it, some fine new buildings came into being.
The master plan for the campus changed the whole agricultural program. The new agricultural classroom building, as I said before, was located approximately in the area that we had always hoped it to be for access to the farm units. The agricultural engineering building was built and the farm stocked. As I recall, we also built the steer barn and the feed mill,
mm-hmm.
and moved the poultry and the dairy units.
Mm-hmm. And also, Bard, there was during the time you were gone, and then later on, there was a considerable expansion in the area for range cattle and for some crop production, is that right?
That's right. During the war, they had leased the Welsh property up above the old Peterson. But following the war, we purchased the Welsh property, we purchased the Peterson Ranch and the Cheetah Ranch, adding more than doubling the total acreage and range.
Mm-hmm. And also this acquisition later on of camp property facilitated the crops program too, is that right?
Yes, the first property was a lease from the state of around 600-700 acres of range land on the National Guard camp. Later on we arranged with the federal government and with the National Guard to lease track land where the old parade ground and down the Sorrel Creek bed.
Bart, one of the programs at Cal Poly that has attracted a lot of national attention was the training in meats, meat cutting and so on. Tell us what happened, what the circumstances were when you came here, and then how it developed.
Well, George, in 1932, we had an open shed behind what was then a garage, in which we would slaughter steers and hogs and sheep. The facilities were no cooling facility. You had a screened-in cooler, but during the warm weather it was rather difficult. One of the things that I remember is that students used to bring steers from home, fatten them on the campus, and slaughter them and then sell them to the cafeteria. One I remember very well was Louis Tennant from Calusa brought 6 Angus steers to the school and fattened them and slaughtered them for the cafeteria, using the money to purchase 6 purebred shorthorn heifers. This program was rather interesting, but we had very few facilities for cutting. Most of the cutting of the meat had to be done down in the college cafeteria. As this program, we wanted to have the students have an opportunity to follow the steer from the time it was put on feed in the feedlot to the time it was ready for the consumer. So in 1951, we received an appropriation to build a slaughterhouse, which was completed about 52. And it had a small cutting room and coolers, and we employed then a full-time meats man. And this program immediately took over and was part of the animal husbandry program, for which each student had the opportunity of taking 2 to 4 units of meats.
Mm-hmm. Now this was about coincidental, or followed shortly thereafter by the development of a feed mill of commercial type and considerable scope, and then later on by a commercial feeding unit for beef cattle, all in the same area. Is that right?
That's right. The feed mill was under construction in 1947. In fact, Alex McDonough had the contract for erecting the grain storage bins and the feed mill. This feed mill continued to grow until they were producing some 9 million pounds of feed for the student projects and for the herds. It has trained many students that have gone on into commercial feed work.
Mm-hmm. Well, real good. Now, another program for which Cal Poly is world famous is the number of foreign students that attend here and from the great number of different countries. Could you tell me the humble beginnings of this program and when it was?
About 1952, I received a call from a friend of mine in Washington, D.C., who was with the USAID program, asking if we would take a Pakistani student that was having trouble at another university. And I said, well, we would try and take care of him. I remember very well because the boy's name was Muhammad Akhtar. He showed up in his good clothes, and as I remember, the first class was with Jim Merson, and he abstained from taking hold of a broom to help clean up after the class was over, and Jim told him that either get into old clothes or find some other college. Well, Muhammad changed his mind, and by the time his 9 months had been completed, he was one of the finest students we'd ever had. And one of the joys you have is receiving a Christmas card from the man in Washington that reviewed him before his return to Pakistan. His Christmas card had this: I have found my soul. I know what makes America great. Everybody works. From that, the program continued to grow, and the representatives of the aid program in Washington visited Cal Poly and proposed a training program for some from the Near East, from Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan and Egypt, and later on a team of 13 from Indonesia, and later still another team of 12 from Turkey. I've had the opportunity of visiting a number of these students in their homelands, and I can tell you that they have accomplished a great deal for the foreign agricultural program after they return.
It's also true, Gord, that in addition to those that have come as groups, that many come from foreign countries and enroll here as regular students, perhaps receiving aid or perhaps not. Is that right?
That's right. Many of them come on their own. Cal Poly is known worldwide for its training in agriculture. Many students from Latin America, many students also from the Near East, especially Iran and Iraq, and areas that need a great deal of this training.
Do you know about how many foreign countries might be represented at the present time? Have you heard?
As I remember, somewhere around 42, 44 foreign countries are represented. The aid program, however, at Cal Poly has grown until Cal Poly has been training in the top five universities of the United States in training agricultural students.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's my understanding that the most recent figures, including fall enrollment, actually number students from nearly 70 foreign countries that have come either through the aid of their own government or have simply come on their own. And certainly you had a major part in it during the period that you were at the Dean of Agriculture. Now, another thing that was very significant was the changing of the agriculture curricula from straight production to one embodying related fields. Could you comment on that, Bird?
A new degree program in agriculture required a great deal of time and thought. And as the program continued to grow, many of the students wished to go on to other universities for graduate work. This required some revision of the curriculum, always with the major thought in mind of retaining the learn by doing, the background of agriculture, but increasing the various courses of related science. This has given the Cal Poly students an advantage in going into graduate work by having a basic knowledge of production problems along with a good, strong related science program.
Well, that's certainly wonderful, and I know that it has meant a great deal to the Cal Poly program, these men going out and making a tremendous name for themselves in professional walks of life as well as in agricultural production. Howard, while we're reminiscing about the good old days and before we get up to the present time, as I recall it, when you were first here and I was first here, they used to cut down a lot of trees around the campus there, and the eucalyptus trees, they cleared them out of the road, and those trees just lay around there, and we didn't have very much money in those days. Now, just what activity did that lead to?
Well, I think you know very well, George, the work that we had to clear out part of the campus. So it made fine firewood, and the faculty members would gather on Saturday afternoons and Sunday morning to get the firewood for the fireplace for the coming winter.
And some of those logs were pretty big, is that right, Bart?
That's right, they were pretty heavy. I'd hate to try and handle them today.
I can remember one day you and I were cutting wood and boosting some of those great big eucalyptus logs up onto the apron of that old circular saw, and we were both kind of green, and we both looked at each other and says, what a couple of darn fools we are. Well, Bart, just bring us up as far as the Cal Poly program is concerned to about 1961. At that time, I'm sure you had dealt with quite a few foreign students, and you thought you'd take a whack at some of this foreign service yourself. Could you tell us about that?
Yes, George. I was interested to see what goes on in the foreign areas, and how the foreign students were able to use the training that they received in America. I had an opportunity to go to Egypt as Food and Agricultural Officer to start a program that had been discontinued in 1956 at the time of the Suez Crisis. This was a most interesting assignment. And for 4 years, I had an opportunity to visit all of the different areas of Egypt, from the south, Aswan Dam, to the western desert, the Karga and Dakhla Oasis, and all of the Nile Valley and the Delta areas. We also had an opportunity to visit some other nearby countries in that period.
In that period of time, many of the countries in the Near East, such as Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Iran, and Turkey. In each country, it was interesting to me that Cal Poly students would always gather when a former Cal Poly instructor showed up. And a grand bunch of boys and retain that loyalty to Cal Poly.
Mm-hmm. Now, during that period, Bernard, I know that you worked hard and did everything you possibly could to try to carry out what you went over there for. Did you feel that you made some or a lot of progress?
This is awfully hard to evaluate. We have to understand the culture of the various people with which we are working. They're proud people, they're nationalistic, and yet they do accept some of the new philosophy in agriculture and some of the work that goes on in making a modern agriculture.
Bernard, then you came back from Egypt, and after your home about a year, you got the itchy feet again, did you? And where did you take off for that time?
Well, George had an opportunity to go to Guatemala to serve as livestock advisor to the Guatemalan government for a year.
It was quite different, I guess, from Egypt.
Yes. Again, you find a different culture and different people, but I was very much interested in the possibilities of agricultural development in this small country. Country of about 4 million people, and yet they have unlimited possibilities in agricultural development along the what they call the south coast on the Pacific. The land is very fertile, and removing the jungles and trees, they are developing an agriculture that will become one of the garden spots of the world. The Atlantic coast side also has many possibilities, and up in the Polacek Valley, and I'm sure that this will become one of the real agricultural areas with the development of more mechanization in the larger fields. The livestock areas are somewhat different from those of the United States. Most of the cattle are raised on the Pacific slope, and they vary from the native Crioli cows that were originally imported by the Spanish many, many years ago and have not been improved, to some of the newer breeds, the Bremas and the Santa Gertrudis. And at their livestock show last year, the top animals would show well in any show anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm. Bernard, I'm sure that these foreign assignments have been challenging and interesting, but I gather that between those, San Luis Obispo still looks pretty good. Is that right?
San Luis Obispo is still one of the finest spots in the world in which to retire and live and enjoy the climate. I still maintain a great loyalty for Cal Poly and think of the men that have contributed so much to its development. The real Cal Poly and the philosophy behind it, developed by President McPhee and J.I. Thompson, C.O. McCorkle, and George Cooper, and the fine publicity we received in the early days through the various newspaper media.
Bernard, you can't see, but I'm really blushing. Well, this recording has been part of a series sponsored by the faculty committee, communications committee, and this interview has been conducted by George P. Cooper.